Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, and welcome to Gaze on Film. This podcast is where we, a pair of gays, talk about what we're watching. I'm Ned.
And I'm Declan.
And in this episode, we're back with our annual Oscars special, the event of the year that everyone's been waiting for. And we've decided to talk about Yorgos Lanthimos's Poor Things. What a mouthful that was. Remember, once we get to the headline feature, there will be spoilers. So, as always, do proceed with caution. But because this episode is a little bit different than normal, there's... I've really thrown myself.
I did tell you the script was different, but I'll say it. Basically, there's no what we've been watching. There's no trailer, trash or treasure. We're going to dive straight into this year's ceremony and discuss the big winners and losers of the night.
Yes.
Have you paid attention to the overall consensus of this year's Oscars?
I've seen Ryan Gosling's performance of Ken.
Which was very fun, to be fair.
That was fun.
Yeah.
I have seen Emma Stone's speech.
With the broken dress.
Yes, with the broken dress. Possibly a couple of other clips.
I genuinely thought that her shock on her face when her name was announced for Best Actress.
Yeah.
Because I think after Lily Gladstone won the sack, I think she was convinced that she wasn't going to win. And I will get to this in the film, but I think... I thought Lily Gladstone's performance was amazing. And I think it's really difficult to pitch all these amazing actors against each other. But for me, Emma Stone is Poor Things. She's in, like, nearly every single frame of the film.
Yeah.
And I guess if we're going off that, I am quite happy she won. I've not seen Sandra Hüller's performance in Anatomy of a Fall, but I know people
thought... Oh, it was really, really good. Yeah. Like, definitely worthy of the nomination.
I didn't think Carey Mulligan for Maestro or Annette Bening for Iyad were ever in the conversation, even though they were nominated.
But we've not seen those two.
We haven't, but just from what I've seen, I don't think people were like, oh, they're going to win.
Yeah.
But the most pleasant surprise for me was Best Visual Effects.
Was it now?
Yeah.
Why, what was it?
Godzilla Minus One.
Oh, that's great. That was
with
it.
A budget of 10 to 12 million. And it, like, went up against some of these other blockbusters. Yeah. Like, it was so well done.
Yeah.
It was so, so well done. So, what did you say?
I think it must have been in, like, the press bit after the ceremony, or maybe it was before, I don't know. I think, I'm going to say the Letterboxd crew. We're interviewing people, obviously, on the red carpet and things.
Is that when they have the tiny little microphone? Yeah.
And they did the... I don't think the Letterboxd one is a tiny microphone. I think it's normal size.
Yeah.
Unless the people are huge. And they did the four favourites with some of the friends from...
I would hate to be asked that question on a red carpet.
I know.
I'm going to have to tell you my latest favourites because I can't remember. Like
the people from Godzilla Minus One, they were really excited about it and their favourites were really, really good. I was like, yep, agree. All like sci-fi, all a bit like
weird.
Extreme, weird,
yeah.
You know, those kind of things.
So, Poor Things won quite a lot of the kind of creative, crafty type awards, including Best Costume Design, deserved. Best Makeup and Hairstyling, Best Production Design. I mean, we're probably going to get deserved. That when we talk about it in the film. I thought the Zone of Interest's best sound win was quite an interesting one, because the sound in that film is not just good, it's very, very creative and like...
It's really, really stripped back.
Yeah.
Which makes it so much more effective. Like, it's definitely a case where less is more is so, so true. Yeah, I think Zone of Interest definitely deserved that.
Oppenheimer won Best Original Score. It also won a lot of other things, as we're going to get to. Best Original Song was What Was I Made For from Barbie. And I will say, Billie Eilish and Phineas' performance of that at the ceremony was beautiful.
Aww.
It was really... She has got a really good voice, Billie Eilish.
Yeah.
Like, her songs aren't always my kind of thing, but when she sings a slow song like that, it's like raspy, but like deep. I don't know. Like soulful. Yeah. It's really nice. Wes Anderson won his first Oscar.
Yeah.
For the best live action short film, The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar.
Really interesting, actually, isn't it? Because he's had nominations a handful of times, and then the time he wins isn't for a feature length, it's for a short.
Yeah.
Mm. I was actually going to watch that short the other day, but then I put Ma Rainey's Black Bottom on instead.
Yeah, it's on Netflix, isn't it?
Yeah.
Best International Film went to The Zone of Interest, because it's a United Kingdom produced film, which according to America is international, which I guess it is. But I'm glad it got some.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that category is a load of bollocks anyway.
I mean, it's UK produced in German language, so it is quite an international.
Yeah, film. But I just think if a film's good, include it in Best Picture.
Well, yeah.
All the time as well. So, although Zone of Interest was up for Best Picture, but it's like, gets put in other categories as well, and I think it waters down its chances of winning big. I don't know. But yeah, I just think it's a weird category to separate them out.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it's the American Academy.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Best Animated Feature, The Boy and the Heron.
Yeah.
I would have personally preferred that to go to Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, but I think that is just a personal point of view to me.
I found
The Boy and the Heron interesting, but I found it far too weird for me.
I know, but I think that the Studio Ghibli fandom is far bigger than the Marvel fandom
globally. Here, I was gonna say,
so I think, you know, it might be a case where echo chambers aren't quite meeting, because people love Boy and the Heron.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
What was quite interesting is they didn't turn up to accept their Oscar, Hayao Miyazaki, who came out of retirement for The Boy and the Heron. But I'm quite glad he did, and a few people commented on this on Twitter. Jimmy Kimmel, which I'm not going to slag him off, because I think hosting the Oscars must be one of the most difficult jobs ever.
Oh my God, I'd be well stressed.
But he said he made a joke about now onto animated film that we let your kids vote for or something. I was like, can we stop with these stupid stuff about animation?
Being for kids.
Especially when you've got a winner like Hayao Miyazaki, who Studio Ghibli is for everybody. Animation is not just for children. There are animated films which are for children.
But there are also live action films for children, so...
But The Boy and the Heron really is fucking weird, and if you put that on for your 3-year-old, they'd be like, what the hell is happening? So, yeah.
Ooh.
Best Original Screenplay, I've not seen it, Ned has, Anatomy of a Fall. I'm not seeing it, so I can't really comment, but I just know that I loved both The Holdovers and Past Lives, and I'd quite like to have seen Past Lives come away with something at the Oscars, because that was our favourite
really, really
film of the
close
year.
Close call, but actually, because I've seen all three of those.
There were some others in there, but I've not seen them.
I think if you look at it with a critical eye, I'd agree with the winner.
Right.
As compared to those two. Not to say that there was anything remotely wrong with either the whole thing.
Well, there's never anything really wrong with
these. It's like splitting hairs, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I just think there was, I don't know, Anatomy of a Fall had a particular something to say that I think the other two didn't necessarily.
Oh.
Something different to say.
You see, the dog was there.
I did.
Yes. And there was a man under the seat for its paw.
The dog won the Palm Dog, didn't it?
God, that's so silly. Best adapted screenplay went to American Fiction, so I was quite happy. And Claude Jefferson got up and did a really good speech about people getting into Hollywood. And he's like, don't make one $200 million film, which is a massive risk. He was like, make five $20 to $30 yeah. million dollar
I
films.
Saw that clip as
and
well.
I was like, yes, that's the kind of films. Like, yeah, the blockbusters are great, but, you know. And apparently the book that he's called Erasure, that this has been adapted from, is particularly difficult to have adapted. And I loved American Fiction, so I was pretty happy to
Yeah, I really enjoyed see. American Fiction.
But yeah, there were some others in there for adapted screenplay, but I was quite happy with that. Divine Joy Randolph has absolutely swept the board across all the awards season for The Holdover. She was really good in that, to be fair.
She was so good in that.
But... yeah, no notes really. No. I can't wait to see what notes. She does next.
She ate, she left no crumbs.
Yeah. Ryan Gosling, Robert Downey Jr. for Oppenheimer, so we start getting to our Oppen homies.
Did you come up with that or did someone else?
Or somebody else. His first Oscar, I find Robert Downey Jr. quite an interesting character, and was happy to see him win when he got up and did his speech.
Yeah.
Then go on to Cillian Murphy. Well, let's just round it off now, I guess, because we're going to get to Emma Stone's win when we talk about Poor Things, and we already have a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But the rest of them are all now Oppenheimer. Best actor,
yeah.
Cillian Murphy.
Yeah.
Best director, Christopher Nolan.
Yeah.
Best picture, Oppenheimer.
Great.
Some people have argued that this is the 2 years in a row where arguably one of the most popular films, both critically and commercially, has won. We had Oppenheimer now this year, yeah. And well, I've totally forgot. It's in my head. The one about the donut, directed by the Daniels.
Oh, Everything Everywhere All at Once.
That's the one. Yeah.
Yeah.
That one last year. So it's like, and apparently this
is that
year,
not like a normal thing for the most critically and box office success ones to.
No.
No.
Oh. No. Sometimes what the Academy see is films that have done well.
Right.
Like. There's years where loads of people haven't even heard of most of the films.
Oh, okay, yeah.
But if you look at, like, so even the list of best pictures, like, a lot of people have seen quite a lot of these films, which is really good.
Yes.
And the Oscar seems to be going in the right direction for that. I do still think they could do with a stunts category.
Definitely could do with a stunts category.
And that would make the... And they did something really interesting this year. When they announced the actors, they brought out 5 previous winners.
Okay.
So they normally used to do, if you won Best Actor, you would announce Best Actress with somebody the following, for next year.
Yeah.
But this year they brought out like 5 winners of the same category, and it was like making all these memeable moments, because like Emma Stone had, absolute, like Hollywood A-listers behind her. Sally Field, Jessica Lange, Jennifer Lawrence, Charlize Theron and Michelle Yeoh.
Ooh.
And then Cillian Murphy had Nicolas Cage, Brendan Fraser, Ben Kingsley, Matthew McConaughey and Forest Whitaker. I mean, so you can tell they seem to be like...
setup.
I think they're starting to learn the lessons that they're never going to get the ratings that they used to, because most people interact with it primarily through social media with what's going on.
Yeah.
But I think they're leaning into that star power and trying to get even more kind of stars to be there.
Interesting how you see things. I would have never even... That would have never crossed my mind.
Yeah. And the Wicked promo's clearly starting, because Cynthia Erivo and Ariana Grande presented Best Original Song and Best Original Score.
Lovely.
So they're obviously starting to...
Oh, well, I am looking forward to that, I must say.
Oh, I tell you what, there was a really cool performance of the Killers of the Flower Moon where they hit the drums.
Oh, I've not seen that.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll check
Waza
that
one out. A Song for My People.
Right.
Do you remember it?
No.
You
Maybe
would.
I will do.
That was like my version of when they did... Yes.
Seals.
But that's the Oscars and awards season done.
My God, what will Moira Rose do till next year?
Well, I know what we're going to do. We're going to have a quick break and then come to this week's headline feature, which is Poor Things.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Poor things. In your northeastern accent.
Do you want to synopsis us up?
Synopsize?
Yeah.
Yes, I do. I had to rewrite this like 2 or 3 times because it's weird and I didn't want to give too much away, but I also wanted to make it good. Didn't want you like telling me off again.
Oh, God.
Okay. Bella Baxter, an unusual experiment by an eccentric scientist, wants to know what life is like beyond their home, where she's been living. When the opportunity for adventure presents itself, she seizes her chance and embarks on a journey of discovery about herself and the workings of the world.
Cool. Where should we start?
That was a long pause.
It was, wasn't it? From both of us?
Mm.
Where should we start?
I mean, just that Emma Stone absolutely deserved the Oscar. 100%. It's so cool.
She's obviously got a very good relationship with Yorgos Lanthimos now.
Yes. Wasn't she in The Favourite as well?
She was in The Favourite. She was in The Killing of the Sacred Deer. No, she wasn't. Hang on. She was in The Favourite. She's in his next film that's out this year. And she's obviously just got a real, like, trust in him to do these kind of things.
Yes.
And I think the way... they seem to just work really well together. Like, they were talking... She was talking about something on an interview. You know, like, the walk she does in this film, and it slowly gets better as she understands her body.
Yeah.
They'd, like, fleshed out 5 different stages. So, because obviously if the film's not shot in sequence either, then they'd be like, right, this is a 2, or, you know, and I thought even just those minute details were, because a walk is funny and it changes quite a lot throughout the film.
Yeah, she becomes it's like she's mobile. Learning to walk and growing in, like, you know, as a toddler, learns how to move their body but also strengthens like their muscles and stuff at the same time. That's how Bella Baxter's character does it, except she's already got the strength of muscle because she's already an adult. So it's really fun to kind of see a grown-up person doing that.
I want to talk a little bit more about that. So some people have criticised this film.
Yes, they have.
It's a baby's brain, but the things that she then goes on to do is not what a baby would do. Those kind of lines. Why did you have something different?
Well, I've seen some controversy around the use of the R word.
R.
As a derogatory term, which is not nice, fair enough.
But that,
to me, I don't really have a response to it, to be honest.
I mean, I don't, other than...
Like, if it wasn't there, I wouldn't be like, why haven't they said the R word? So, like, does it need including? But also, I've got...
I don't want
to... There are more things to focus on. So...
I don't want to sanitise media either.
No, exactly. So, and another thing I saw people uncomfortable with was Willem Dafoe's facial prosthetics.
Why?
Because...
Is it like the Bond villain thing? Where every Bond villain has a scar?
It's like the whole, like, facial differences make people's lives difficult enough because people treat them differently and they don't really want to be portrayed disrespectfully on the screen. But to that in that respect, I think that if you can kind of allow it for this film, you do get to know Willem Dafoe's character and understand things.
Yeah, he's
about
not just got
it.
Like when Bond villains have just got a scar for the sake of being. It's actually not, explained
it's
what
not
his
gratuitous
father did to him.
This.
Yeah.
So I think, you know.
And I will say the makeup on it looks
really good.
Really good.
Really,
yeah.
Really good.
I like that it started quite a bit in black and white.
Yes. Well, that's the thing I want to say about it. Kind of, you could be forgiven for not really knowing when it's set.
Yeah.
But I think the things that place it in time are that it starts in black and white, and what's Willem Dafoe's character's name?
Godwin.
Godwin.
Dr. Godwin, yeah.
Dr. Godwin. He is like a surgeon in the very early days of surgery, when people in like normal day-to-day society thought that surgery was like an abhorrence. And you see people treat him with quite significant disrespect.
Yeah, doesn't someone say, not abomination, like...
Not in June. In June.
Abomination.
Something like that, yeah. So those are the things that I think you're like, right...
It's not
our
world,
though, is
it? I
roughly know where we are.
It's a hyper-realised, fantastical kind of version of the world. It's like...
It's definitely an imagined world, but it's all imagined based in reality.
Yeah, because like the production design, especially when they go to Lisbon, I was like...
I know.
It looks like Lisbon, but it's clearly not.
It's recognisably Lisbon.
Yeah.
But it's also recognisably entirely fabricated. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't finish that point of going back to people thinking it's inappropriate that they take a baby's brain. Shall we try and finish discussing that?
On.
Well, is it? I don't know.
Well, I never really thought it was.
Me neither.
And I think I might make an assumption about people who get that from it, that they're taking it a little bit too literally.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's a theme. The theme is really a woman discovering
herself. Well, the point of her having an infant's brain is that she can approach this whole journey she goes on with both free from judgment and with the kind of naivety of a child that enables her to make choices that an adult with an adult's brain probably wouldn't make.
That's what I thought was really interesting about it, though, like seeing a grown-up.
Yeah.
In a group. No, because it's not... When you're a child, you're forgiven for your naiveties and and the daft things you do. But kind of putting that brain into an adult who's having to function in a version of high society is quite funny. And it does...
Yeah.
It does lend itself to quite a lot of funny moments
it
as well.
Does. Very
when she says,
so.
I'm going to punch that baby, is so funny. And she's got loads of other funny bits. Like, even when she gets up to dance in that scene, and she can see she's just excited about the music and she dances. There are some other funny bits that I can't recall off the top of my head now. Have you got any written down? No.
No, I didn't write down any of the funny
bits. I do titter quite a
some
bit.
Some of it
in this
is
film.
Like, yeah, it does make you, but like, not verbally, audibly laugh.
Verbally laugh.
Verbally laugh.
Ha, 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 ha.
But yeah, no, I think on that point about it being a baby's brain, it's more what having a baby's brain would mean rather than her actually being a child, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
To lay that criticism to rest.
Yes.
And it means that she can approach everything she does with zero judgment, and that she can learn so much from all of the characters she interacts with, more so than they even think that she's learning. Do you know what I mean? Like, she's picking up on subtleties and strange cues. And
it's just like no
social...
filter, isn't it?
It's really, really interesting.
It's like when they go up to that table when they're on the boat and she befriends that that older lady, and she asks her, does she pleasure herself? No, when was the last time
she had sex? In like,
she didn't say sex, though. And she didn't say furious jumping either.
No.
She said something else. She said years, and she's like,
yes. Please tell me you at least play with yourself.
But it is just, she was almost like animal-like. Like when she sat at the kitchen table and she's putting that apple in her. And she tells the maid that she's found out a way to feel happiness all the time. Oh, it's so funny. It's so weird. Like, it is a very... It's a weird fucking film. Like,
yeah. That's exactly weird, one of those times where being able to just go with your thing without any sense of shame or judgment reveals what, like, underlying human nature is going on.
Like the primal instinct.
Nothing stopping you doing the thing you want to do in the moment you want to do it.
So what we're saying is she lives out her intrusive thoughts. And to her, they're not intrusive, really.
Every intrusive thought wins.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then she starts... But then as she kind of progresses, she does start to check herself every so often because she's learned from what she's done before.
The world's got hold of her.
Not necessarily. Like, sometimes she'll have done a thing when she wanted to do it, and then the repercussions of that haven't been worth the thing in the first place, so she doesn't do it again in the same way. I can't think of a specific right now, though.
Have you noticed the hair gets longer throughout the full film?
Yeah.
I haven't noticed the first time, then one of our friends, hello Theo, mentioned it to me.
Oh, did he?
And I was like, oh yeah, that's cool. And then I noticed when they bring... when they bring Max in.
Max McCandles.
Yeah.
I love his name.
When Godwin brings him Mr. in to McCandles. Observe him and to observe Bella and put like...
He's like, her hair is growing 2.5 inches a day.
I thought, I noticed that a bit more. Yeah. And the hair and the looks in this film were
just
like...
Oh my God. Did you say it won costume design?
Yeah.
Because...
How could it?
The costumes, like... How could you not? So many, like, different textures, different fabrics, different...
Well, you said about this film, didn't you? You could feel the texture.
When we saw it in... what was the cinema?
Which Cottage cinema? Road.
Cottage Road in
Headingley. As part of Leeds Film Festival.
I think something about being sat in, like, an old cinema seat with, like, the velvet cushions... Being able to see this film where everything is so tactile and like there are like there's even the lounge in Godwin's house, the walls and the floor are all padded as if they're sofa cushions, and he's got a piano sitting in the middle of it. I just wanted to like reach out and touch it all, and then all of that like soft texture
throughout.
Oh yeah,
they do, don't they? Yeah,
all of the soft textures and things throughout were really. Almost jarring against the really sharp, like, uncomfortable noises coming from the score. Because they were all, like, sharp strings and off-key piano and all that. It was really cool.
Yeah, it was.
It does, I think it takes quite a lot of energy to watch it, though. Because...
It's quite sensory.
It is quite a sensory experience.
Yeah, there's a lot going on in the frame. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean... Because you can kind of let yourself just get into it, that sort of sensory experience really helps that, I think. It's really easy to not get distracted. Or I find it really easy to not get distracted when watching this.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
I think Mark Ruffalo was having a great time on this film.
Honestly, how could you not?
He looked like he was having a lot of fun with the role.
Yeah, definitely.
And him and Emma Stone had a lot of sex.
So much sex.
Why do people not do this all the time?
The fact she called it furious jumping.
Yeah, no, so funny.
Honestly.
She's just a woman that knew what she wanted as well. Like.
Yeah, and she didn't really think about why she wanted it. She just wanted it.
It was like they were exploring female sexuality before gender roles even touch you.
Yeah.
And we even see that when she... Later on in the film, when it's found out that her old husband finds her, but obviously she doesn't really recognise him, but gives it a chance.
Oh yeah, that's a really interesting thing.
He wants to mutilate her so she can't experience pleasure.
Mm.
It's like, oh God, that's dark.
That whole kind of learning curve, I think, that symbolises maybe Bella's maturity starts when she's a sex worker in Paris and she makes friends with that other person whose name I don't actually know. You know, the one who's like, so when did you have your baby? And she's like, I've never had a baby. And she's like, that's a C-section scar. You have had a baby. I think Bella is the one that puts two and two together and she's like, maybe I do need to ask God what happened before I was there.
So Bella ends up being in a bit of a relationship with another prostitute.
Yeah.
Called Toinette.
Yes.
And there's that Madame Sweeney in it as well, who was Madame a bit Sweeney, of an icon.
She's scary, terrifying.
But, yeah. And Toinette introduces Bella to the concept of socialism.
I know,
well.
I love that.
Yeah. It's quite funny.
Yeah, I think Bella's like whole learning curve, like going from Lisbon where she like learns about joy, finds loads of food she loves, learns how to dance, has loads of sex, all of that, and then stops off in Alexandria where she discovers that not everybody's life is like that.
Wants to give them money. I thought
whose children
was quite
are starving,
yeah.
And she wants to give them all the money and all of that. And I think
because that's another thing. Like, if you are that if you were that person, if you were a person who woke up tomorrow and you'd forgot everything,
yeah,
and you saw people on the street,
you'd be like, having I've realized, got this money,
yeah,
have it.
Before the world gets hold of you and you start thinking, well, there must be a reason that they're on the street, or I can't help that out. You know, all those kind of views.
Well, it's not even necessarily that. It's also the fact that if you give away all of your money, you don't have any left. That's what Bella does. She's like, well, I've got all this money and I'm having a great time. They're clearly not having a great time, so let's give them all this money. And then she learns that by giving away all her money, it means she hasn't got any money.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's definitely not as cynical as thinking about what got those people to where they are. You know what I mean?
Mm.
Which I like, because she's like, no judgment. She's like, they're people, I'm people. We're all
And
we're
I did
people.
Find it interesting that she ends up going back to Alfie, her ex-husband, and he kind of, towards the end of the film, kind of totally shines a light on everything that she will no longer stand for.
Yeah.
Like the way he talks about women, the way he talks about the world,
yeah.
How rude he is to people. Like,
yeah.
She's learnt about how to behave and be the polar
yeah.
opposite to all those things.
Like, he's an abusive man, and the only reason that I can see that she goes along with him is because being married to him, she's sort of got that legal obligation, and by that point she's learnt what legal obligation means.
Yeah.
And so has to. And she also still, I think, quite enjoys new experiences. And to her, going along with this husband would be a new experience. So
yeah.
There's all of that as well, isn't there?
There is. And I like the way it ends, because we see Godwin die.
Oh,
not
yeah.
That's how I like how it ends,
it
but
really
she's decides to put his brain into Alfie's after he just shoot himself in the foot. Yeah, he does. He accidentally
yeah.
does. So she takes his brain and puts him into Godwin's brain and puts it into Alfie.
Oh, yeah.
And then Bella and
puts a goat's brain into Alfie's body.
Yeah.
Which is funny.
Yeah, she does put. So she puts.
I don't remember her putting Godwin's brain into Alfie's body.
Oh, no, she didn't.
It's a goat's brain.
A goat's brain into Alfie's head.
It's funny that she calls him God the whole time as well.
Yeah. I love God.
Really
God.
Interesting point.
What else was I going to say? I like the way Willem Dafoe burps.
Yeah, and he makes that bubble. That's so funny.
Just a really weird. I still remember doing the trailer Trash Out Treasure for this, and I was like, I don't like the look of this. Because I'm not good with films that are like. I'm not good with films that are weird.
Yeah, no, you don't like it.
But I did enjoy this, I mean, a lot.
A lot.
So, yeah. Have you got any more notes?
Yes, something about... I saw an interview, oh, maybe it was just a conversation, actually. It was between Emma Stone and Olivia Colman.
A recent interview or when they were doing The Favourite?
I think it was quite recent. Oh, right. It was since Poor Things.
So. Oh, right, yeah, yeah.
Apparently people have been asking Emma Stone a lot about sort of why she's so nude in lots of it, and they're like, oh, it's very male gaze. And she's been like, well, actually, no, because I'm a producer, so it's actually my fault.
That's what I think. Like, I think sometimes...
Why are you trying to take that away from me?
Yeah, like, criticism is due when it's due, but, yeah, like, not sometimes. Everything has to be. Like, it almost goes the opposite way because you're presuming that Emma Stone didn't have any say or you didn't
exactly.
have, like...
It's almost the same way that Instagram algorithms see, like, a nipple and assume it's pornographic.
Yeah.
It's not. It's just a nipple. Like, nudity isn't always male gaze. Sometimes it's just nudity.
I really struggle with knowing what female and male gaze is, to be honest. I think it's because I'm a gay man.
Yeah.
Unless a film is literally in a strip club.
I mean, if it's made all by men and it's all about men and there are loads
of
women. No,
but people even say, like, the way the scenes are framed and shot and the way that, like, even the way the dress is, like, for the men.
Yeah.
So unless it's in a strip club or something, like, I'd be like, oh, that was probably... Well, unless it's Hustlers. But...
Well, also, if it's filmed in a way where the camera's viewpoint could be, like, you in the room's viewpoint, it's as if... Do you know what I mean? Like, rather than watching from outside, you're watching from in the scene. I don't know. Something like that.
Well, yeah.
But yes, that was... Yeah, I wanted to...
Yeah, Emma Stone is a producer on it. She's a very good talent.
Don't make it all male gaze when she is very much a female.
I want to stay on that point a second. I don't get the way she demands sex and she wants it when she wants it.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't say that's... I think it's quite a decent look at female sexuality and, like, female empowerment.
Yeah.
I don't get
so that. Do I. Like, I don't get... There's a lot of... I say a lot. Like, there are pockets of people giving it the criticisms for various reasons. But I don't think any or many of them stand up to scrutiny, really.
No, they probably don't.
Like, I think this film was done really, really well. Really thought through.
Sensitively really, thought about as well.
Yeah, sensitive. Excellently, like, created, like, it's a work of art. All of the imagination that's gone into the scene, like, even the way the boat looked.
Oh, I loved the boat.
So cool.
I loved the sky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I like the way it moved us around, like, with a little title card every time they changed location and things.
And the weird graphics behind the title card, like, on the title card. But I'd love to just... Maybe not too long in Yorgos's brain, but just a little bit, maybe.
Just a little bit, a little taste.
It might frighten me.
Yeah.
Star rating then?
Oh, 5.
5 from me.
Yeah.
We've seen it twice, as we say. We watched it at Leeds Film Festival last year, and then we've watched it on Disney Plus again in the lead up to the Oscars, and still a 5-star for me.
Mm.
But I will say I enjoyed it more at the cinema because I tend to enjoy films more at the cinema. I'm more in it. Like, I'm more in the experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think you can replicate it at home.
No.
Well, now let's unsheath the gaydar. It's a wonderful piece of machinery devised by Ned's own hand, and we use it to rank all the films and TV based on their LGBTQ+ appeal. Let's see where the gaydar ranks. Poor Things.
Hey, where? Right. Oh, we're mid-table, actually.
That means nothing to me until you tell me what films are around it.
Above... You're going to laugh.
This is going to be good.
Above Chicken Run, Dawn of the Nugget.
Oh, my God.
and below Elemental?
I'd say above Elemental.
Why?
Well, there's a same-sex relationship in this at some point.
Oh, yeah, I'd forgotten about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's above Elemental?
I'm going to jump it a little bit further, actually. Now you've
just have a little recalibrate, King.
Above Elemental, above the Marvels, above Asteroid City.
Below.
Below Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
No, higher than that as well. Why? There's a queer couple in it at a time.
Oh, blink and you'll miss it.
Spider-Man doesn't have any in.
Spider-Man's all about, like, trans
but no,
imagery.
We imagery, but doesn't show anything.
Right, well, I'm not putting it above Saltburn.
No, that's fine. Why?
Because that's really horny.
Oh God, no, it's fine. And I will say it's not a film, as we say sometimes. This is not a film that is, you know, for a queer audience, but anyone could enjoy it.
You have to be pretty queer minded to watch this.
You're using queer as
in the traditional sense of the word.
No. I'm talking the gays and the trans and the non-binary.
It was an intentional play on words, King.
Oh, right, okay. But, yeah, I think... But the craft in it is good for everyone to enjoy.
Mm.
But no, it's not a film that's like, this is for the gays. Mm. It's been marketed for us.
No.
But I would still seek it out after we've just spoiled it all for you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we did warn about spoilers.
Nearly every episode of the podcast goes into spoilers, so...
If not every episode.
Yeah.
Silly, really. If you're listening to this before you've even seen the film. Oh, I'm just getting back to the words, one sec.
Oh, God.
And that's all for this time. If you have enjoyed this episode of Gaze on Film as much as we have...
Oh, that's a new line.
Please subscribe, rate and comment on your podcast platform of choice. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram. We are at GazeOnFilmPod. And check out our Letterboxd accounts. The links to those are in the show notes. We would love to hear your thoughts, so please do feel free to drop us a message. I have been Ned.
And I've been Declan.
And this has been Gaze on Film. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.